Hey guys, in the past couple of weeks, we've been seeing widespread protests in the US following the killing of African American man George Floyd while in police custody. It's brought up some of the racial inequities that black people face in America and has sparked an anti-racism movement all around the world. While the racism that black people face in America cannot be directly appropriated in the Singaporean context, we do have to face the racism that exists in Singapore so we can all work towards a more kind and empathetic society. So this week, Joel and I wanted to have a conversation about race here in Singapore. But being two people from the majority race, we knew that we would need some help. So we brought some friends along with us. Welcome back to the Singapore.
Pursuant to Section 49, Subsection 7E, Paragraph A.
Because nobody, no group of men have got the will, have got the capacity that do more for this country.
Every Singaporean.
That's what is different about Singapore.
All right, so joining us this week, we have three lovely people. Maybe you guys can introduce yourselves and tell us a little bit about what you're doing at the moment.
Kai, you want to go first? Khairul Anwar.
Hi guys. My name is Khairul Anwar. You can call me Kai. I'm 27 this year, and I'm a content strategist at a social agency.
Khairul Nizam, you want to go first?
Yeah. Hi guys, I'm Khairul Nizam, I'm 26 this year, I graduated from NTU last year. Currently waiting to start my pre-doctoral program at SMU Law in August. So I'm in my last month of work, so yeah.
Oh, Emily, you want to go next? Yeah, sure. I mean, why not? My name's Anmo. I'm 25 this year. And I'm currently working at a PR agency, so I'm an account executive. And yeah, just graduated, same year as Kai, you know, just out here trying to live my life and survive.
Cool, I feel that. All right. I guess to start us off, I think it's been a really tough few weeks. I mean, like a few weeks of reflection for everyone. I just want to know how you guys are feeling with the events happening in the US, and I guess why should people care about this in Singapore right now?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's very, very unfortunate what's happening right now, you know, in the US, given George Floyd's situation and the fact that he was murdered in broad daylight. But also it's important to note that it's not very surprising. You know, this has been going on from God knows when. You know, the first time I was aware of anything like this happening in the US was when, you know, Trayvon Martin got shot by George Zimmerman, and that was very, it was very, very traumatizing for me as a person, just to know that this boy was just walking home and this man just felt the need to shoot him for any reason at all. So it's not surprising, unfortunately. But also in the same breath, I think it's very, very encouraging and heartening to know that, you know, so many people are rallying together for change, which has, you know, it's long awaited. It's been a long time coming. And, you know, I'm just glad to see that our generation is really just coming together to try and make some change.
Kai Nizam?
For me, as a Singaporean who has a deep interest in the black culture, you know, be music-wise, through rap, hip-hop, you know, fashion, I feel like I'm an obligation to understand the history behind it as well. And in turn, an obligation to respect black lives as well. So this whole incident has made me, I mean, extremely angered and outraged. Doesn't really cover it, but we've all seen how the system has never been kind to the blacks. I mean, since slavery, if you want to trace it all the way back. And I feel like Black Lives Matter, the movement is important because systems of power need to be held accountable for this.
Kayama?
Like what Amo said, I felt very sad to see it, but I also wasn't surprised. You know, I'm looking forward to how the people at the top respond to it, even though like what's been happening now isn't the response that we want.
Yeah.
But also how the new generation of leaders will react to this and the system that will be put in place to prevent this from happening again.
Thanks for sharing that. And I think for a lot of people who are like the majority, for example, like for me, I've only experienced racism outside of Singapore. And it's not really something I associate with home, right? So I think it's important to talk about what people from minority groups experience, you know, here in Singapore, here at home. And so could you share a little bit about what your personal experiences with racism have been like?
Sure, I'll go. It's fine.
Yeah, I'm
all right, go for it.
Kai, do you want to go?
You can take all the first questions.
Yeah. Yeah, we got this.
You can just edit and see who starts first. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's important to... It's a very good thing that I'm seeing right now that people are, you know, really trying to speak up about what's happening in Singapore as well. Because initially when everything happened with this George Floyd incident, I was thinking to myself, like, yes, you know, racism exists in Singapore as long as I've been around, you know, I've experienced racism. But also, when is the right time to speak about what's happening at home? Because right now there's an entire revolution going on the other side of the world, and to try and put those two things at the same level, it didn't really feel right to me. But then I think I sat down and realized that, hey, you know what, I can multitask. Like, there is racism going on in Singapore, and that's definitely something we have to talk about and have to bring to light for people that don't know or, you know, haven't experienced it. But there's also a revolution going on in the United States right now to give Black people the basic human rights that they deserve. So these two things are both important, and they both have to be talked about. So, you know, it's good and encouraging to see that people are trying, you know, to have these conversations and see how the Black Lives Matter, like, movement relates to us in Singapore. And just because, you know, racism in Singapore is not as violent, you know, you don't see people dying on the streets every day, that doesn't mean it doesn't exist. A lot of the racism that I've experienced has been very, like, you know, internalized. It's very, like, microaggressions, you know, small comments. And even with the racism that I face, I feel that, you know, I mean, I'm Indian, for everyone who can't obviously see me. So even within the racism that I face as an Indian minority, I still have privilege in that because I'm fairer, because I'm North Indian. And it's very weird because it's always underhanded comments like, oh, you look so good for an Indian person, or, oh, you're lucky you're damn fair, you know, or, you know, it's aunties telling me after I come back from camp that, wow, you're so dark now, you better, you know, do something about that. So people are not spitting on my face and telling me to fuck off, you know, on the streets, but it's these things that you end up, I mean, I've heard these, like, comments, you know, even after people learned about 9/11, we were very, very young, I was in primary school, but after people learned about that, I started being called, like, a terrorist. And when I was younger, I understood that that wasn't something I was comfortable with, but also at the same time, I lacked the education, and I also lacked, like, the vocabulary to explain to my friends, like, hey, I don't think this is cool. Like, I don't feel good about you calling me a terrorist. So I ended up, you know, just being like, hey, you know what? Maybe it's a joke. So I went with it.
So there's a term in feminist academia. It's called intersectionality. So it was coined by the scholar Kimberly Crenshaw. And what it basically means, as Aware put it, we don't live, like, single issue lives. So, like, overlapping identities like race, sex, and class sometimes, like, determine the kind of discrimination that we face. So, Amo, if I can direct this question to you, can you talk about something that you've experienced that was kind of unique to your race and your gender as well?
That's interesting. I mean, if we're talking about just, you know, being a woman of color in general, and we talk about, you know, the kind of, for example, beauty standards, you know, that we have in Asia, Southeast Asia, wherever it is, it's always been, like, okay, I'm going to speak from coming from, like, being Indian, right? You know, I've seen on TV since I was young, it's always, like, fair and lovely, all these, like, whitening creams. It's, like, this idea of being fair, being, like, light, has always been just seen as, oh, if you're fairer, you are prettier. And these, like, notions have also existed, you know, in my family. And, you know, over the years, as I developed my own sense of understanding of what it is to be a woman and all these, like, these ideas of skin, tone, race, and everything, I came to realize that that's a bunch of bullshit. You know, you shouldn't have to. Why would being darker be something to be ashamed about? You know, and just really starting from home and educating the people around me to be like, hey, stop telling me that I need to become fairer, I need to stay at home. That's a messed up thought that unfortunately you grew up with, which is fine, you know. In different times, there were different like understandings of what beauty was. But right now, and for me, that's not something I agree or align myself with, and you shouldn't either. If you go into, you know, our like go-to stores like Guardian, what's the other one?
Watson's.
Yeah, if you go into these stores, if I go in and I look at, I want to buy foundation, for example. It's a very simple example. If I go and find foundation, I'm either the darkest color that they have, or the darkest color that they have doesn't like fit my skin color, which is absurd because I do not, if you look at a range, like a shade range of like 100, I'm maybe a 40. So you're telling me that that's your range, like white to a bit off-white. And it's very sad because you have to work with what you have. And I have to, you know, order my stuff online or wait for this very specific Watson sales where they sell more colors, essentially. So like the fact that I have to go through all that just to be able to find foundation that matches my skin color in itself is crazy. And, you know, just this whole concept of, yeah, you got to be fair, you got to be this, you got to be that. Like, yeah, it's unfortunate, but also I think it's important to learn and unlearn within ourselves of what these, like, yes, these beauty standards have been set, fine. Maybe you don't fit those beauty standards, but who fucking cares? Like, do you, you know, learn to embrace and love yourself before anything else? And I know it's very, very easy to say, especially in a world where, you know, if you don't look a certain way or you don't, whatever it is, then it's like, oh, maybe you're not as desirable, for example. Fuck that. You don't need to be desired by people who clearly like have such a narrow sense of what beauty is. Just keep it pushing. And it's very easy to say, like I said, but it takes a lot of years of, you know, work within yourselves to be able to accept and embrace that.
Kyle, maybe you can share a little bit about what you've experienced.
I think personally, I felt a lot of times where I had to just work harder than a lot of my peers to like prove myself, especially like in school, because I was from a Chinese majority school, so I was from ACS. A lot of times where I had to work harder just to prove myself to the rest of my peers, as well as my teachers. They like, for some reason, like to pick on me even though like I was getting above average marks, like, you know, similar to the rest of my classmates, but I could tell that, you know, she had it out for me lah, and I didn't understand why. So that was what also made me work harder, but at the same time, I couldn't understand why she like was picking on me. You know, when I did well, they were like, you did well for Malay, you're smart, you're quite smart for Malay. Then I'm like, so you're taking away my effort that I put in just to, you know, just to pass off that comment. Yeah, so a lot of these things, you know, when I was younger, I just brushed them off and did whatever I could. But as I grew older, I thought that, like, I looked back and like, okay, that's not right. And when I went to JC and everything, the comments, they got less, but I could still feel that sort of, I wouldn't say oppression, but, you know, it just felt uncomfortable to me sometimes in class.
Yeah. So when I was in poly, I did have a classmate, this Malay classmate who I was quite close to. But so similarly to you, I noticed that he was really competitive with a lot of us, and when results came out, he would only compare his results against like the us Chinese peers lah. I guess maybe, do you feel that there are like people have different expectations, and why do you think that maybe people didn't expect as much from you or had these prejudices against you?
I think because there's also a long-standing stereotype that Malays are lazy and not like hardworking and smart. So because of this, a lot of people, I wouldn't say only Chinese, but a lot of other people from other races as well, they don't expect someone of another race to be doing as well as them because of these stereotypes in place.
Yeah.
Compared to like the Chinese stereotype of being very hardworking and very smart and like down to earth and doing it
and
for
I
the
just
great,
wanna say that sorry, I just wanna say that it's very exhausting as a minority because, you know, Singapore's education system in itself, right, is made for us to always just try and to be the top, do our best, you know, be competitive. That has been ingrained in all of us. So is that just existing across the board? And then there's an additional like 10 levels for people of you know, minority races to be like, oh, you have to prove yourself. You have to really show that you as a minority can do as well as the rest of the society. And it's frankly exhausting for anyone for that matter. And yeah, sorry, just go on, Kaya.
No, I think that's super interesting. But like, do you think that that pressure comes from the people in the majority, or like it comes from kind of everywhere?
I think it comes from everywhere, because it's like, it's the pressure that you feel people place on you and the pressure that you put on yourself. Because I'm like, okay, if I'm the only Indian in the room, and in which most cases I am, I'm the only, not just Indian, only person of color in the room, then I feel the need to show that, hey, you know, we're great, we're good at what we do. And it's not to say that, oh, in any case, if I'm in a place with like all people in different races, then I'm just like, oh, whatever. It's just that additional stress of knowing that you can't mess up. And it's hard when you mess up, because then it goes back to, oh, your entire race is like this. Oh, this is what Indian people do. You know what I mean? It's very, very, it's additional stress that no one needs, to be honest.
So
I think a lot of times in school, I was like the spokesperson for my community in class, because I was the only like Malay person in class. So like when I did something good, they were like, oh, I didn't know like Malays could do that. Or when I do something bad, like, oh, see, all Malays do that. So is this kind of like sentiment that it is still present in schools, I feel. And I mean, it's what still sticks with me till today.
Kai
Nizam, do you have like an experience like that? Or maybe you want to share something that you have experienced in your youth as well?
Okay, I just want to put a disclaimer out there. I mean, as much as we talk about and get involved in the whole BLM movement, I just want to make it clear that in no way can we, you know, relate directly to the ongoings in America as minorities in Singapore. Our lives are not under threat the moment we step out of our house. No, are we in danger when we're going about our daily activities and all that? So we also, in turn, do not have the same fear for our lives as compared to the blacks in America during an interaction with law enforcement, for example. But that being said, that's not to say that we should discount the racism we have over here just because, you know, nobody's getting killed. So while we cannot relate entirely to the BLM movement, there are some aspects of it which can be relevant to the situation over here as well. So the racism we experience here is I feel more subtle, like they both have brought up. It's very subtle, it's very microaggressive. It gets under your skin. You get these underhanded comments. I mean, you don't have to look far about this. The most recent incident that comes to mind is when, I mean, it has become such a problem that sometimes you don't even notice it happening nowadays anymore. And a couple of times when I was on the way home from school and I was together with my girlfriend, and it was a empty train, and we sat down next to a bunch of Chinese office ladies lah. And the moment me and my girlfriend sat down beside them, they got up and they looked at us weirdly, and then they shifted across to the other side of the train and sat down there. And then, okay, for me, I did not notice at all. I mean, I come in my own world when it comes to public transport. I mean, using my phone and stuff like that. But then suddenly my girlfriend turns to look at me, she's like, "Did you just see what happened?" And I'm like, "No, what's going on?" It's like this racist ass Chinese people just like stood up and got up and went to the other side of the train just because we just sat beside them. Like, it was an empty train and there was like no reason to do that. I mean, I don't know, it could be a factor of things to consider, but I didn't notice it at all, and my girlfriend had to point it out to me lah. So maybe these are some of the things that we should be more mindful of when it comes to dealing with all these race issues, especially.
Right. I think it's interesting because, I mean, for me, like, personally, I've never really acknowledged, like, my race as being part of my identity. So, like, I think, like being Chinese, like, I only realized that I'm Chinese, like, during Chinese New Year. And I think a lot of people in, like, a majority group, like, we don't really see ourselves as a quote-unquote, like, group, right? So, I mean, I think I'm interested to know, like, how, like, your race, like, plays into your identity. Like, when did you become, like, overtly aware of your race? Or like, did you ever have like a conversation like with your parents or your family about it?
I feel like since the day I had like any sort of understanding of me as a person, like my race has always played a part in a lot of the things that I do. Of course, when it comes to achievements and stuff within my family, it's like, oh, you know, my daughter did this. It's not, oh, my Indian daughter did this. It's not, nothing of that sort. But I think I've always just been aware that my race has a part to play in everything that I do. And, you know, growing up in a like a majority, like always being the token Indian, for example, in any situation, even in school, you know, it's majority Chinese people. And I was like the one out of the two Indian people on my level. So it's like, it was hard to really embrace and accept my Indianness, or, you know, I'm like half Indian, half Pakistani, like all these elements that make me who I am, right? It was very hard to accept it, and it's very hard to be like proud of these things. So for a long time, I always tried to disassociate myself with being Indian. It was like, I guess it stemmed from a bit of a shame thing, because you feel like, oh, you know, you're lesser than, which is very, very unfortunate and very, very sad. And it's unfortunately also something that people still feel and still experience, you know. Someone posted a thread about how on Twitter on how she, you know, she would be made fun of because she was really dark by her Chinese friends. So they would say, oh, if you touch this, it becomes dirty, which is, when you hear these things, it's like, why would anyone in the right frame of mind say this to anyone in the world? But that carried on with her till right now as an adult. You know, she doesn't really like play with babies who are lighter than her. You know, she doesn't really want to do all these things. So you might think in the moment it's like funny or stupid to say these things, but it really does affect people. And, you know, so, I mean, I'm thankful enough to have been surrounded by people who have allowed me to express how I feel and really embrace who I am. And also, of course, you know, just trying to learn and understand more about my culture and who I am. So over the like last maybe 2 or 3 years, I've been more able to really like accept and really embrace who I am. So I don't think that my being and my personality being identified with, you know, my race and my background is necessarily a bad thing, but it's also just sometimes very hard. If I can't be who I am without my race, it's also sometimes a very difficult thing to have to go through.
I think in my case, I always felt like very racially strong, if that's actually a term, because I mean, it's very important to me that I had like family support. So we always had a lot of family gatherings. I think it's very common for the Malay community to have a lot of family gatherings. And apart from that, because I also played football from such a young age, and a lot of Malays play football, so I had that sense of community every time I stepped into a team. And from there, I learned more about my race itself from other people. So I wouldn't say I distanced myself from my race during school, but because I was that like token Malay in class as well, I had this sense of like, I'm not like other Malays because I could speak a bit better. I studied a bit harder, but I also recognize that I was from a position of privilege. But using that privilege was what I've been trying to do ever since I recognized that, to help change the perceptions of my race to the rest of the community.
Karanida, do you want to jump in also?
Well, if you're asking me for the first time I felt
I guess it's more like I would assume that growing up, like there would be like an instance where maybe someone tells you or you think to yourself, oh, I'm different.
Okay, and, I mean, for me, like my mom is Malay, my dad is Indian, so I don't really fit into either category in a sense, because like when I was hanging out with my Malay friends, I would get questions like, you're Malay, but why your skin so dark? Like, are you sure you're Malay or not? And then when I was with my Indian friends, they were like, you're Indian, but how come you don't speak Tamil? Are you sure you're Indian or something like that? So like, it was a neither, you know, there kind of thing. And it being from a class that was, I mean, I think I was only there was only 2 or 3 of us Malay and Indian people all together in the whole class. So it became more of like you had to make it or you wouldn't stand out, or you just be just another person in class, you know. So for me, it was sort of a pushing factor to just keep your head down and just trying to prove everybody wrong. Like, you know, somebody from a minority group can actually make it out there. So, I mean, of course, you get those underhanded comments from people like, you don't even belong to either race, either of the race and stuff like that. So it does kind of get frustrating, but you just learn to accept it and just try to just be better, because that's the mentality that was ingrained in you from the very start.
Thanks for reaching the end of part one of this episode of The Singapod. Have a listen to part two, where me and Joelle discuss with our guests the ways in which we can start to combat racial stereotypes and affect change in our community.